stand by. Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome. Thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, DB29 for ZOS Utilities Best Practices. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll get an overview of utility-related best practices that are recommended for the lab. We'll share recommendations for DB2 ZOS, B8, and DB29. The speakers for today's teleconference are Hawken Roberts, Senior Technical Staff Member, DB2 Service and Development, and Tom Hubbard, Product Specialist Manager, Rocket Software. As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to our host, Mr. Hawken Roberts. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. As mentioned, my name is Hawken Roberts. I work for DB2 Development at Silicon Valley Lab. I am the technical lead for the DB2 Utilities group, and I'm going to be talking about DB2 for ZOS Utilities and providing an update on recent maintenance stream enhancements and improvements in DB2 Utilities in DB29 for ZOS. Starting on slide 2, this slide provides the agenda, and as you can see, we'll start by looking at maintenance stream improvements, which are improvements which have been made with APARs either in version 8 or in version 9 of DB2, which hopefully you'll be able to take advantage of even today in your existing environment. Then, following that, the main focus of the presentation will be utilities enhancements in DB29 for ZOS. We'll take a look at what we've done in utilities to support core function improvements in the product. Beyond that, we'll take a look at availability, performance, backup and recovery, and some other enhancements also. And then finally, we will take a quick look at some of the items which we are working on for the next release beyond version 9. Now, there's a lot of material within this presentation, and time permitting, I will go into some detail on some of them, but I expect to simply gloss over a number of items, and if there are any questions regarding those, then feel free to ask questions at the end of this. Moving on to slide 4, a major improvement which was provided in the maintenance stream earlier on this year was something which we call sort num elimination. Our recommendation for running DB2 utilities has been to allow DB2 utilities and DFSort to dynamically allocate sort work data sets for sort processing. In order to do that, you do not hard code sort work DD cards in the utility job. Instead, you would specify a sort num value, which indicates the number of sort work data sets that you wish to allocate. The difficulty there is that it's hard to determine an optimal value for sort num, the sort num parameter. If you specify too low a number, then it's possible that the utility could fail due to lack of sort workspace. If you specify too high a number, however, you can get excessive allocation of sort work data sets, and that can then have a detrimental impact on utility parallelism and performance, for example. Therefore, in order to simplify this, we provided 2 APARs, one for version 8 and one for version 9 earlier on this year, which eliminates the need to specify a sort num parameter. The 2 APARs provide 2 new ZPALM parameters. Primarily, the primary ZPALM parameter is UTSortAll. That parameter, if you turn that on, says that you want the DB2 utility to determine an optimal value for the amount of sort workspace that needs to be allocated for this particular utility job. With UTSortAll turned on, we will have a look at statistical information and estimate sort workspace, and DB2 utilities will then allocate the sort work data sets that are necessary. If you specify a sort num value, then DB2 will not override it. If you want DB2 to override existing settings for sort num, then you would turn on the second parameter, IGN sort n, which of course is short for ignore sort num, And if you turn that on, then the utility will override your setting for sort none. So our aim would be to recommend to customers that they turn on UT Sortal, test it out, and if happy with it, then subsequently you can set ign sorten, and then we would ignore the sort none specification on your existing utility jobs. Note, however, that we would not override any sort work DD cards that you'd specifically hard-coded for the job. Moving on to slide 5, we have a number of other recent maintenance changes. You can have a read through the APAR description or the PTF cover letter. I won't go through all of these. You can see here that a number of them are performance improvements for various stages of load and reorg utilities. The top one here on this list, PK56334, removes the setting of LPL and write error page range states where indexes are being rebuilt, for example. If we're rebuilding an index, then there's no point in having LPL states carried across from the old index to the new index. Moving on to slide 6, further improvements, PK51853 will allow reorg and load of more than 254 compressed partitions. This APAR introduces a new ZPARM whereby you can specify that you want the reorg or the load in version 8 to handle more than 254 compressed partitions. We had to put a limit on that because of the amount of virtual storage that's allocated for the building of the compression dictionaries. But if you have sufficient virtual and real memory, then you may want to increase that ZPARM, and note that in version 9, the ZPARM only applies to load because we changed the reorg utility in version 9 to use space more efficiently when building compression dictionaries for multiple parts. Other enhancements here, a very nice enhancement in PK63324 and PK63325 is a load copy dictionary enhancement. We had a number of requirements from customers who were inserting into new partitions. For example, if the partitioning key is date-based, then if you're inserting, you would subsequently insert into new partitions. As you move on to the next month, you insert into the next partition. And if you want your data to be compressed, then today the only method of getting compression is either through load or by reorganizing your data. And we had a number of customers who said, I just want to insert new data into new partitions, and yet you're forcing me to reorg my partition simply in order to gain compression. Well, what we provided with these two APARs is a new parameter for the load utility called copy dictionary, which will allow you to copy a compression dictionary from an earlier partition into a new partition that you specify. So effectively, you're priming a new partition with an old compression dictionary from an earlier partition in the table space. So that, of course, avoids the need to run the reorg altogether if all you're doing is running the reorg in order to gain compression. Okay, one other APAR that I want to mention here is PK47083. This is an improvement for the load utility to ensure that cache dynamic statements get invalidated. The reason for this is that if you have an index that's temporarily in rebuild pending, then the DB2 optimizer will not choose that index for access path. Therefore, it's possible that while the index is in rebuild pending, you may find that your access to the data is via table space scan, for example. Well, if that index is in rebuild pending only temporarily, for example, while a load is running or while the utility is running, then once the rebuild pending is reset, you really want the optimizer to choose an access path and consider that index for access path selection. That all works perfectly fine, except if you're caching dynamic statements. Because if you're caching dynamic statements, then the access path that says table space scan could be cached and could remain in the dynamic statement cache for minutes, hours, or potentially longer. So we have the ability with the RunStats utility today to invalidate statements in a statement cache. But what we decided to do with PK47083 is to automate that process and say that once we have reset rebuild pending at completion of a load, we will go and invalidate any cache dynamic statements that have a dependency on that table, so that we will then go through a full prepare, and the optimizer will then go through and determine whether it should now use that index. Right, moving on now to slide 8. A number of enhancements which are made in version 9 in utilities is to support core new function within the base product of DB2. This slide lists a number of those areas. Universal table spaces is a major improvement in version 9 of DB2. It's a new table space structure that marries the benefits of segmented with the benefits of partitioned. And there are two flavors to that, partitioned by growth and partitioned by range. Beyond that, we of course have XML table spaces in version 9. We have the ability to turn off logging for tables or table spaces in version 9. That, of course, has some significant implications for recoverability, because if you turn off logging, then, of course, there are no log records to apply. It also means that if somebody has been performing updates through a thread and that thread is cancelled, then those updates cannot be rolled back. So there are some significant implications to using not logged in version 9. So therefore, it's not for everybody, but may be beneficial in certain unique circumstances. Next, we have clone tables in version 9. This really provides us with what is effectively load replace share level change, and I'll mention that a bit more a bit further on in the presentation. We have index on expression, so now an index doesn't have to consist solely of a set of columns of a table, but can in fact exist on an expression that is based on columns on the table, which of course has implications for rebuild index and check index, and of course we have to support some new data types in version 9 also. Moving on to slide 9, we have here a number of charts going forward which focus on utilities and utility-specific processing for PBG, universal table spaces. I'm not going to go through these in a great deal of detail. The slide here simply demonstrates that you get partition-level independence when running utilities against a PBG table space. So on this slide, you can see that the base table space has grown to 2 partitions, and you can run RunStats, in this instance, against the entire table space share level change, which will put all the partitions into UTRW state, which means that a utility is running, but you have full read-write access to all of the data within those partitions. At the same time, you can run an image copy against the first partition of the PBG table space, and that will mark the first partition in UTRW UTRO, which means that now all the data in partition 1 is read-only due to the copy running shell of a reference, but partition 2 you still have full read-write access to. Moving on to slide 10, this simply illustrates that it's perfectly okay to carry on inserting into partition 2 even though partition 1 is read-only. Slide 11 provides some further details about how the reorg utility works with PBG universal table spaces. Note that there's no concept of rebalancing. So you cannot rebalance data across multiple partitions of a PBG table space. There is no partitioning algorithm for PBG table spaces, unlike PBR, partition by range universal table spaces. So there's no concept of rebalancing for reorg. When you reorg the entire table space, all the rows could potentially get shuffled up and reside in part one. But in version 9, we cannot shrink parts 2 and 3. So even though after the reorg, parts 2 and 3 may be empty, those data sets will continue to physically exist. That's something which we plan to fix in the next release of DB2. Moving on to slide 12, discusses load, copy, and rebuild index for PBG. I won't go into any great detail there. Slide 13 illustrates how PBGs work with XML columns and log columns. The thing to note about PBGs is that as you fill up partition 1, we will automatically grow a second part, and then when you fill up partition 2, we'll grow a third part. If you have an XML table space, then the XML table space will be PBG also, and that will simply grow as needed. So the XML table space will grow independently of the base table space. However, the same is not true for lob table spaces. If you have a lob column on a table that exists in a PBG table space, then you have a one-to-one correspondence between a lob table space and a lob column in a PBG partition. So the illustration here on this slide shows that we have one lob column on the table, and we've got three base partitions, and therefore we have three lob table spaces. So that continues to match the existing way that lob table spaces are allocated for non-UTS table spaces, all the way from version 6 up until the current day. Moving on to slide 14 and slide 15, we'll now talk a bit about online utility enhancements. The first one to mention here on slide 15 is that now you have the ability to rebuild indexes using share-level change. So this means that we will allow you to rebuild an index with full read-write access to the data. It's going to be extremely useful if you want to create a new non-unique index. You can create a new non-unique index specifying the option defer yes, which will put the index in rebuild pending, and then subsequently you just rebuild the index in order to materialize the index keys. Now, you can create a non-unique index specifying defer yes, and then subsequently rebuild the index share-level change, and effectively you've eliminated the outage for creating the index altogether. Obviously, this doesn't work for unique indexes, because if you create a unique index and you specify defer yes, then the unique index will be put in rebuild pending, and now you will not be able to insert any new rows into that table until that index is taken out of rebuild pending. The reason for that, of course, is that we rely upon the index to guarantee the uniqueness of the data, and if the index is in rebuild pending, then we won't allow you to insert any rows because we won't be able to guarantee that the rows you're inserting are unique. Moving on to slide 16, reorg enhancements. Some good performance improvements for reorg in version 9. We now unload and reload multiple partitions in parallel. We have parallel log apply as well during the log phase, and we have eliminated the build to phase. If you're reorging a subset of partitions of a partition table space and you have a non-partition secondary index defined on the table space, then today in version 8, you have a build to phase to fix up the NPI. In version 9, that build to phase has gone away. That means that the NPIs are also shadowed. It means that the NPIs are implicitly reorged, so it may not be necessary to schedule separate reorgs for the NPIs. It means that you get better availability, but it also means that you cannot run multiple reorgs at the part level for separate partitions of the same table space concurrently, because each of those reorgs is going to be shadowing the NPI data set, and we cannot have multiple concurrent shadows of the same page set. Moving on to slide 17, for more online utilities, we already provided check index share level change in version 8, and that algorithm for doing so has been extended to support check data and check lob now also. So we will take a flash copy or a concurrent copy of the page sets involved, and we will then process the check against those copies rather than against the real data. Repair utility has been asked to provide share level change also. I wouldn't expect that to be a major issue for a number of people. Hopefully people aren't in the habit of going and flipping on and off bits and bytes within pages, within DB2 page sets. However, it's a useful serviceability enhancement. Reorg of lob table spaces now supports share level change. Prior to version 9 of DB2, your only option was share level none, which means that the reorg of a lob table space, while that ran, no access was allowed to the lob data at all. In version 9, now you can reorg a lob table space and have read access to the data, to the lob data, while that reorg is running. You can see, obviously, that we started off with share level none. Version 9, we get share level reference. It's probably not too much of a stretch of the imagination to see that in the next release coming along, we plan to support full share level change capability for reorg of lob table spaces. I mentioned earlier clones. Clones provides the ability to do a load replace share level change, but it's only for UTF table spaces. What this means is that if you're in the habit of having a static table that you refresh, say, nightly, you would refresh it using load replace, but the problem is that while that load is running, nobody can access the data. Well, now with clones, you can define a clone of the table, and you can insert into the clone, you can load into the clone, you can do virtually whatever you want to the clone. When you're happy with it, you can then issue an exchange between SQL statement, which will just switch the clone with the original page set. So the outage to refresh the whole table is minimal. We just drain everybody off from the original table and the clone, and then perform the switch. The final bullet here is simply an enhancement to the unload utility to support an SQL enhancement which allows skipping of rows that are locked for transaction updates. Bear in mind that if you exploit that, you may be getting 5 rows unloaded instead of the 10 rows that really qualified for your SQL statement. But it enables you to not wait for transaction locks. Moving on to slide 19, I already talked about parallel unload and reload and sort processing for reorg table space. Slide 20 gives you a diagram for reorg log apply parallelism to speed up log apply processing for the online reorg utility. Slide 21 illustrates that we now have check index share level reference parallelism for improved check index performance. And slide 22 illustrates some significant improvements which we've made for reduction of CPU time cost for DB2 utilities. Largely, this is a reduction due to improvements that we've made in index processing. So, for example, with respect to the reorg utility, the more indexes you have defined, the greater the CPU time reduction you're likely to see. Moving on to slide 23, RunStats utility has been enhanced to provide histogram statistics. So for non-uniform distribution of data, it's now possible to specify how many quantiles you would like RunStats to group the data in, and then DB2 RunStats will then gather information, distribution information, based on the number of quantiles that you specify. This then provides yet more information for the DB2 optimizer to provide an optimal access path for SQL queries. Moving on now to slide 24 and 25, we'll take a quick look at backup and recovery enhancements. The first is an enhancement on slide 25 to the Modify Recovery utility. Modify Recovery allows you to clean up and delete recovery information that's stored within syscopy and syslog range. And prior to version 9, the only way of doing this is by specifying the delete option, where you say what you want to delete beyond a certain age or a certain date. It makes more sense, however, to say what it is you want to keep rather than what it is you want to throw away. So now we have a retain option for modify recovery, which says, I want to keep the last 10 image copies, or, for example, there's no sense in keeping recovery information around when I've only got 2 months' worth of archive log information stored in the BSDS. If I've only got 2 months' worth of log information stored in the BSDS, there's not much point in syslog range keeping recovery log information around from 3 months ago, because I'm not going to be able to recover using that syslog range information anyway, because the archive logs aren't known to DB2 anymore. Hence the log limit parameter. Another option is the GDG limit, whereby if you are taking image copies using GDGs, if you've got a GDG cycle of 30, there's absolutely no point in keeping syscopy information around for more than 30 image copies, because that image copy data set has been reused. And, of course, it's possible to specify a combination of these, and we plan in the next release to provide some further enhancements in this area. Moving on to slide 26, the copy utility has been enhanced to always perform check page checking, so we will validate the integrity, the physical integrity of pages as they're being copied, because if something is wrong with the page set, if a page is corrupted, you'd far rather know that at the time you take the image copy than when you need that image copy data set for recovery. The copy utility has also been enhanced to provide scope pending support to handle page sets that are in copy pending. The third bullet is a very nice enhancement, not specifically to improve the copy utility, but to reduce the impact of the copy utility on online transactions. Typically, when pages are read into the DB2 buffer pool, those pages are aged out using a least recently used algorithm. So pages can be stolen if they're not used for some time. However, typically when pages are read into the buffer pool for the copy utility, they're only being read in order to copy them. And it's highly unlikely that those pages are going to be referenced by a transaction, an application that's running. Therefore, it makes more sense that the pages that are read in for the copy utility get stolen before pages that are being read in, that have been read in, on behalf of transactions. Hence, the copy utility has been enhanced to use a most recently used management of those pages rather than least recently used. So with this enhancement, the aim is to not see any degradation in buffer pool hit ratio for applications whilst image copies are running. The final bullet here is to provide template switching. So if you look at the example at the bottom of the slide, we've defined two templates. One of them is called small, which will write an image copy data set to disk, and the other one is large, which writes the image copy data set to tape. The small template has got a limit parameter on it, which says if the page set is greater than 20 cylinders in size, then I want to switch and use the large template instead. So when I run these two image copies, the first copy is a table space, which is called small, and notice that both of these image copy statements are both specifying the same template. They're both specifying template small. The first image copy is, in fact, of a small table space, and so that image copy will go to disk. The second image copy is of a large table space, presumably a table space that's more than 20 cylinders in size. And in that instance, we will try to use the small template, but we will see that the page set is more than 20 cylinders in size, and we will then switch and use the large, and we will redirect that image copy date set to tape. Moving on to slide 27, recover utility enhancements. We now provide the ability for the recover utility to restore objects at the object level from a system-level backup. So if you're using backup system to take system-level backups, volume-level flash copy backups of your entire DB2 system, now with the recover utility, you can recover an individual object and allow the recover utility to consider restoring that object from the system-level backup. So, for example, if you have a system-level backup from, if you want to recover a particular table space to the current point in time, if you have a system-level backup from yesterday and you have a full image copy from last weekend, you're far better off restoring from the system-level backup and just rolling forward on the log for one day rather than restoring from sequential copy from last weekend and rolling forward on the log for a week. So it's a very nice enhancement for the recover utility. Moving on to slide 28, another improvement in the recover utility is that now if you recover to a prior point in time, we will ensure that the page set is consistent, transaction consistent at the end of the recovery. Prior to version 9, if you recovered to a point in time, we would recover you to that LRSN or to that RBA, and we don't care if we're in the middle of 5 units of work. In version 9 of DB2, now we will back out those in-flight or uncommitted units of work to ensure that the pace is consistent. This means that if you were in the habit of running quiesce utilities on a regular basis to provide you with a consistent point at which you can recover back to, now you wouldn't need to do that anymore because the recovery will automatically handle the situation for you. Moving on to slide 29, recover restore before, I won't dwell on this. This is something which can be useful in certain circumstances, and it allows you to specify which recovery base you want to use if you don't want to use the most recent image copy for recovery. The second bullet here is a nice enhancement which allows you to see the progression of recover log apply via display utility. It can be very difficult to determine how long it's going to take recovery to complete when you're in the log apply phase, particularly if the logs are on disk. If the logs are on tape, then you can often track the mount messages, but if the logs are on disk, you really don't have much idea how far we've got in the log apply. Now, the display utility command will tell you that information so you can estimate when your data will be available again. Slide 30, further enhancements. In version 9, we support large block interface for tapes, and that can have a significant reduction in elapsed time for both copy in writing to tapes and for recover, restore, restoring image copies from tapes also. We also support large format data sets, which can be very useful for copying large table spaces with templates. Moving on to slide 31, in version 9 of DB2, there have been some further improvements for backup and restore system. I already mentioned that we're able to recover at the object level using system-level backups. We also provide tape support, so now you can take a backup of your entire system, and we will take a volume-level flash copy and then store that backup on tape. We provide support for incremental flash copy via 2A bars in version 9. And we also allow RTS columns to be updated by the backup system utility. So moving on to slide 32, here you see an illustration of the new parameters for backup system that provide support for tape control. Moving on to slide 33, on restore system, you're also able to specify certain parameters. Say you want to restore from a system-level backup that's stored on tape. Slide 34 shows the enhancement to backup system to support incremental flash copy, whereby you can establish an incremental flash copy relationship between your DB2 data volumes and the target volumes for the flash copy for the backup system. So you would establish an incremental relationship, and then that incremental relationship will exist between your DB2 source volumes and your target volumes until you specify that you want to end that incremental relationship. Note that if you want to keep multiple versions of system-level backups, so you want to store multiple system-level backups on disk, you can only have an incremental flash copy relationship with one set of volumes. So if you want to store three separate versions of system-level backups, you can only have an incremental relationship with one of them. The other two versions will be full system-level backups, i.e. we would have to copy every single track rather than just the change tracks. An illustration here on slide 35, you can see that at time zero, we issue a backup system and we take a full system-level backup. At time one, we say backup system establish SC incremental, and now you'll get an incremental system-level backup, but we regard every single track as having changed, so the amount of time that it takes to perform the backup behind the scenes is the same as at time zero. Now, at T2, you say backup system. Well, now the incremental relationship has been established, and we will simply copy the changed tracks over to the target volumes. So the amount of time it takes for the background copy is much smaller because we're only copying the changed tracks. What you end up with at time two after that copy is a full system-level backup because those changed tracks are being copied to the same target volumes as at T1. So it's like taking an incremental image copy and a merge copy at the same time. What you end up with at the end of the day is a full system-level backup, but we're only copying the changed tracks. Same with T3, T4, and T5, but at T5 we specify withdraw SC incremental, and then after that, the next backup system will revert to taking full backups, and we will backup the entire volume regardless of what tracks have changed. Slide 36 takes this one step further and simply illustrates that if you're keeping two versions, then you only have an incremental relationship with one of the versions and not the other set of target volumes. So at T0, we take an incremental backup, and so version one is an incremental. Now at T1, you take another backup system. Well, now we're going to be backing up to a different set of target volumes because you say you want to keep two flash copy versions. So we're taking a system-level backup to a different set of target volumes. We don't have an incremental relationship with that set of target volumes, so now you will get a full system-level backup. At T2, the next backup system, we've now flipped over to the first set of target volumes, which we do have an incremental relationship with, and so at T2, the backup system will be an incremental backup, and so on. Moving on to slide 37, a couple of miscellaneous enhancements. A very nice serviceability enhancement is that all utility messages in job output now have a Julian date and a timestamp associated with them. So you can see, looking at the job output, exactly when DB2 messages, utility messages, were issued. I already mentioned the limit of 254 parts per reorg, which has been lifted in version 9 of DB2 for compressed table spaces. And DSNACCOR store procedure, which is used to gather statistics to recommend utility runs, that has been enhanced in version 9 of DB2 and has been renamed to DSNACCOX. So DSNACCOR will still continue to work, but our recommendation would be to change any applications that are using DSNACCOR to use DSNACCOX, since it provides further enhancements. And as you can see there, my recommendation would be to refer to APAR PK44133 for further details on that. Finally, on slide 38, I want to briefly mention a couple of future enhancements which we're planning for DB2 utilities. We want to ensure that utilities run as quickly and as non-disruptively as possible. Now, one way of doing that is by avoiding having to run the utility altogether. So I mentioned earlier that the only way you can get compression today is by either running load or by running reorg. Well, what we plan to provide going forward is the ability for DB2 to build compression dictionaries on the fly during insert processing. So that, of course, would avoid the need to run a reorg altogether in order to build a compression dictionary. Also, we realize that it's extremely difficult to determine what statistics are appropriate to be gathered. You can either gather too few statistics by run stats, in which case application performance may suffer. Alternatively, if you gather too much statistics, then you're simply paying additional overhead in running run stats. So we plan to provide improvements whereby we can intelligently determine what statistics should be gathered based on information that we gather from applications accessing data. And then, via a set of control tables, we could potentially not only provide recommendations for what statistics should be gathered, but potentially also determine when it would make sense to run stats, and then run stats and gather those statistics so that we ensure that application performance remains optimal. Other improvements that we're looking at, we expect to continue to extend exploitation of flash copy technology. In doing so, that would then enable us to say, I want to take a shared level change image copy, so a completely non-disruptive run of the copy utility, but what I want to end up with at the end of the day is a consistent image copy data set. So effectively, the image copy data set is as if you were running copy share level reference, but you in fact ran copy share level change. And we plan to exploit flash copy technology to give us that capability. Other enhancements here that I would just point out, virtually at random, we understand that there's a lot of contention and concern regarding the UT serial lock for DB2 utilities, and we plan to remove the UT serial lock in the next release of DB2 to improve utility concurrency, and a number of enhancements for the reorg utility. There are some usability improvements that we want to make for the reorg utility, specifically with regards to lobs, for example. Okay, that was just a very quick run through a number of enhancements which we have, both recent in the maintenance stream and with respect to version 9 of DB2 for DB2 utilities. And at this point, I'll turn over to Tom Hubbard, who is a representative for Rocket Software, who will provide details on the DB2 Utilities Enhancement Tool and the great value that that adds in complementing the capabilities of DB2 Utilities.
Thank you. Good day, everyone. Thank you, Håkan, for the nice introduction. I'm here to talk about the DB2 Utilities Enhancement Tool for ZOS version 2 release 1. My name is Tom Hubbard. I'm a product specialist with Rocket Software. We are the developers of the tool. Although the tool is marketed by IBM, Rocket does the development for IBM on this particular tool. And we'll go to the next slide. This is our agenda. We're going to talk about the problem and the background that this tool was intended to address. We'll do some analysis of the marketing requirements that we had for this tool and more background on why we particularly decided to do this. Then we'll go into the DB2 Utilities Enhancement Tool itself, or the solution, and a little bit about requirements prioritization. The problem that the Utilities Enhancement Tool was geared to address is there is a huge backlog of requirements against the DB2 Utility Suite, and it continues to grow. And the more that we talk about trying to replace competing utilities, the longer this list grows. So we tried to find some mechanism of providing these requirements without waiting for the utilities enhancement cycle. Many of the requirements are specific to a few customers, and it's not generally a good idea to make every customer pay for every piece of functionality. So we're working to implement the enhancements in a prioritized order on a cycle time that is something less than the DB2 release cycle time. The utilities release cycle time is tied inexorably to the DB2 engine, but the tools release time is not. So by putting enhancements into the tool, we can deliver them faster and more efficiently than we can necessarily with the utilities enhancement suite. I also want to note that the utility suite is focused on new version support of DB2 first and foremost, and any enhancements to functionality come after that. Finally, the utilities enhancement tool is designed to address enhancements that are needed in order to replace competitive situations. We've missed tools opportunities at IBM due to lack of utilities function, and we're trying to address that with the utilities enhancements tool. Next slide. On the analysis of requirements, many of the requirements outstanding can be satisfied using pre- or post-processing utility statement, i.e., they don't need to happen inside the utility's code path. They just need to happen either before or after the utility's exit. Examples of this are listed on the slide. Load constraint values, and we have 9 requests for that. Splitting and sorting the load input to enable greater parallelism. A no restart option so that the utility doesn't keep track of the restart information and therefore reduces overhead and runs faster. And a plethora of other requirements along this vein. The competitors' utilities currently address many of these issues, and what we're finding in our sales situation is that these types of functions are embedded in certain customers' workload to the point where we need a solution now. We can't wait for the next release of the utilities to do that. Frequently, we find that customer scripts can be written to do this. Some customers are doing that today. They've hired a contractor to write the scripts, or they've found other means to do this. There are very few existing customers, however, who are willing to write the supplementary code. If they already have it in the competing utility, they aren't going to go write it for themselves to make the IBM utility sufficient. Therefore, we talked about putting together the utilities enhancement tool. The next slide, our solution. The IBM solution is to develop a software platform for pre- and post-processing the DB2 utilities suite. This allows us to get into the job stream before a utility executes, make some changes to either the control card syntax, perform functions, or get into the utility after the utility has executed and, again, provide additional functionality. It also provides us with the ability to deliver utility functionality more rapidly than the utility suite offers. Again, the tools are not tied to the DB2 engine, so it's possible to deliver new functionality in a tool like DB2 Utilities Enhancement Tool much more rapidly than it is in the utility suite. This is, as the slide says, a long-term project. There are a large number of requirements. Some of those requirements may be absorbed into the utilities suite over time. And the determining factor on those is the functions that are needed by the vast majority of customers into the utilities suite will most likely be absorbed into the utilities suite over time. Those functions that have a very small customer demand will be maintained in the utilities enhancement tool. The reason for this is not wanting to charge every customer for the development cost of every single piece of functionality in the utilities, particularly those that are used by small sets of the customer base. You can expect to see frequent releases of the utilities enhancement tool and the opportunity to add significant functions during the service stream. This is one of the things that the utility suite strives hard to avoid, and that is adding new functionality to the utilities in the service stream. In the past, we found that to be not a good idea, so the utility enhancement tool provides an ability to add maintenance and new function in the maintenance stream without impacting all of the utilities in the DB2 engine. The Utilities Enhancement Suite is actually a rename of the DB2 Thread Expert for ZOS to IBM DB2 Utilities Enhancement Tool for ZOS. And it took the existing functionality of the Thread Expert and added significant new utility enhancement function, the first being a DSN UTIL-B intercept. And this enables the second bullet to happen in that by intercepting the DSN UTIL-B call, we can then parse the control cards, determine the objects involved in this utility, and automatically use the thread expert thread blocking capability to cancel threads that are accessing these objects and, in fact, block new threads from happening. So this was a significant enhancement to the thread expert capability in DB2. The intercept also allows for several utility enhancements, including a pre-sort keyword addition to the load utility. This allows us to pre-sort the data for load automatically based on control cards and provide significant performance improvements to the load. Another often requested feature is to automatically create the mapping table and index for online reorg and, in fact, delete those tables after the online reorg has completed. This functionality is enabled through the UTIL-B intercept and the utilities enhancement tool. Load with constant values, constant and value if keywords are supported using the utilities enhancement tool. The slide shows a small graphic of what the syntax of those would look like. And these new syntax are supported by the utilities enhancement tool intercepting the load utility request, stripping out the new keywords, performing the function, and then passing the appropriate syntax to the load utility and letting the actual load utility run as designed. Okay, the next slide talks about an overview of the utilities enhancement tool. The largest functionality is a carryover from the Thread Expert utility. Thread Expert provided the ability to cancel threads that were accessing DB2 objects in order to allow utility processing. This was really good. The DBA could code up a job or a job step that ran before his reorg, killed all the threads that were accessing the objects, and then let the reorg proceed. There were a couple of problems with that in that the DBA had to specify all of the objects for which threads were going to be canceled, number one, which could be a long list. And second, once those threads were canceled, there was no way to prevent new threads from accessing the object. So the enhancement for utilities enhancement tool was, one, the DSN UTIL-B intercepts the control cards for the utility and parses out the object name and cancels the threads for all objects specified in the utility control cards. That's number one. So the DBA no longer has to build a list. Number two is the status of the object is changed so that no new threads can be started accessing that object until the utility is complete. Then once that's performed, the utility is executed as normal, and the object status is changed back so that users can access the object again. This is all completely seamless, and no changes to the utility JCL are required. There is an ISPF user interface to display and cancel threads. This allows users to bring up a list of threads and cancel particular threads or particular users. The difference between this and what a traditional performance monitor would do on canceling threads is you can specify, show me only the threads that are accessing particular objects, and then go through and cancel those particular threads. This is much more object-oriented than your traditional display. And in batch processing, we provide the ability, as I've already talked about, to both cancel threads and block new threads from accessing your object to ensure that the utility is complete on the first try. Next slide talks about the ISPS interface. And we talked a little bit about that on the previous slide. This provides an active interface, which you can provide a filtered list of threads. You can view all the details about a thread that may be causing access problems in terms of who owns this thread, which objects it's accessing, how long it's been running, what locks it may be holding. All of these details are available through the ISPF interface. And you have we provide the ability to selectively cancel the threads. So everybody knows if it's the CFO running an accounting report and you need to run a reorg, probably his accounting report is more important than your reorg, so you don't want to cancel that. But if it's some user just running a query against a table, your reorg is more important, so you could cancel that thread. We provide a comprehensive message list from cancellation processing. So if the thread can't be canceled, we'll give you an error message indicating what the problem was. If it can be canceled, we'll give you a message indicating that it was successful. If we have to escalate cancellation, i.e., we can't cancel the thread, but maybe we can cancel the batch job that's generating the thread, that escalation is automatic, and there will be messages indicating that that processing has happened. You can also use the ISPF interface to temporarily override the initialization options. Those changes are only valid for the life of the started task. So once the DB2 Utilities Enhancement Tool task is recycled, your overrides are set back to the original initialization options. Okay, the batch processing, the next slide talks about the batch processing in the Utilities Enhancement Tool. Number one, we've talked about this create batch job steps for blocking and canceling threads for reorgs. This is to support the utilities, the thread expert method of doing things so that the existing customers didn't have to change their JCL. The second talks about the DSN UTIL-B intercept, which is what I've talked about. Primarily, it's a new function in the Utilities Enhancement Tool, and it cancels the thread automatically and determines the objects based on the utilities control card. We have three modes of execution in the batch thread. If you code a batch job step, you can check your parameters. You can run a simulate mode, which will tell you which threads would be canceled if you ran this for real. And then you can run in an execute mode, which says, I'm really running this job, so go ahead and cancel the appropriate threads. The next slide talks about the load utility enhancements. We have enhanced the load utility syntax to include the constant and value if options to replace the value for a particular field in the input records with another value that you specify. This was a very popular requirement with customers coming from other vendors' utilities, and so we needed to provide the functionality. And what we do is intercept the control cards, parse the syntax, replace the value, and then pass the new data onto the load utility. The pre-sort option allows us to sort the rows by OBID and clustering index key. This allows for enhanced database performance and load performance, so you don't have to go through some sorts for the index afterwards. The users do have to manually add the options to the load utility syntax, but we strip it out. We take care of handling passing the appropriate syntax onto the load utility. Okay, the next slide talks about the DB2 Utilities Enhancement Tool reorg enhancement. The biggest one in the reorg space is to automatically create and size the mapping table and mapping table index so that reorg table space share level change is appropriately specified. Plus, we automatically drop those objects when the reorg processing completes to preserve the DASB space. There's no changes required to the existing JCL to take advantage of this functionality. Simply installing the utilities enhancement tool will put it in and do the intercept necessary for this functionality to become active. We also support standard DB2 restart utility processing for which an interception has occurred. You wouldn't like us if we didn't, so we don't require any user intervention or any special processing for a restart. The normal utility restart, as documented in the utilities reference manual, is all that's necessary. We also provided functionality to limit the duration of reorg utility jobs. In addition to a deadline parameter in the utility, we also say if the utility runs for more than 4 hours, stop it and give up and we'll start over another time, so that you can limit not just the end time but the duration. So if you had a deadline of 6 a.m. but you only wanted it to run 4 hours and the job starts at 1 a.m., your deadline parameter wouldn't take effect for 5 hours, so this duration parameter will take advantage at an earlier point in time. Next slide talks about our check data enhancements. One of the difficulties of check data was that the discard was to DB2 table spaces in the check data utility. We now support discard to and discard space options as an alternative to using the DB2 table space. So you can have your discarded rows go to a sequential file, and the discarded rows and utility control card statements to load them into a DB2 table at a later time are written out to the files. You can optionally manage the files using the DB2 template statements, as with all the utilities, we try to support all the standard syntax. The next slide talks about terminating threads. This is through the ISPF component, and it's a manual process executed by the DBAs who've decided not to take advantage of our automatic processing. You can determine any thread activity referencing specific objects or indexes or tables residing within table spaces and terminate those threads. You can terminate based on connection and job, plan, package, program. We have input masking available, so you can supply database name percent as within standard DB2 SQL syntax to build a list of threads. The point is you can build a list of threads that you want terminated and then terminate all those threads based on the filters you've specified. The next slide provides a couple of limitations. We don't cancel certain threads. They could get us into trouble or get you into trouble and hurt your system, so we will never cancel KIX protected or reusable threads. Those can cause problems if we cancel them, so we just won't. If there's an active thread with no plan open on the thread, there's really no need to cancel it because there's no locks or claims on a DB2 object, so why go through the overhead of canceling the threads? We also, as a note, do not cancel our own threads. The DB2 Utilities Enhancement Tool has to use a couple of threads to get object names and such from the DB2 catalog, and we'll never cancel our own threads from the started task. We also provide pre- and post-cancel thread user exits, so you can send notifications to users or whatever you need to, or notification to DBA that this group of threads was canceled. Whatever is necessary to support your normal business processes is provided through pre- and post-cancel exits. The final slide is a summary. We talked a lot about the cancel and block threads on DB2 objects to allow utility processing. This is a very important feature in that it's now an automatic process within the utilities enhancement tool. It kills the existing threads, runs the utility, and then allows access again. And in the meantime, it also blocks new threads from happening. This is very important. Your utilities are going to run. They're going to run to completion, and you're not going to get a call at 2 a.m. in the morning saying that the utility app ended. We have, again, an ISPF user interface and batch processing to display cancel threads, block threads through batch processing. All of that is available in the tool today, and you can expect to see more and more functionality as time goes forward. The load utility and reorg utility syntax enhancements we talked about. We also talked about a check data enhancement as well. There is a litany of other requirements that over time will be put together. Talk to your IBM sales rep about getting a briefing put together for future enhancements on the utilities enhancements tool. And any questions from here? After this, I'll hand the call back to the operator.
And thank you. And again, we'd like to thank Hawken and Tom. Now we'd like you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live question and answer session with our presenters, and your feedback is important to us. We do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. Now to participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Now please listen to all options before making your selection. Question one. Please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. And if it was low, press star 3. Now let's pause for just a moment. We'll allow everyone an opportunity to respond. And question two, how was the level of technical information presented in today's teleconference? If it was at the right level, please press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. And once again, let's pause for just a moment. And now question three. Do you have plans to move to DB29 or ZOS in 2008? Press star 1. Or if in 2009, press star 2. No plans at this point? Press star 3. Again, we'll pause for just one final question. And our final survey question today is, first of all, we'd like to say we hope you enjoyed today's teleconference. Please let us know if you're interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1, and for no, star 2. And that concludes our survey for today. Once again, thank you for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. If you would like to ask a question today, please press the star key followed by the digit one on your telephone. And we'd like to remind you, if you are using a speakerphone, remember to turn off your mute function before signaling for a question. Now, once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit one. Let's pause for just a moment to assemble our roster. And first we have Hari with Hari's Database.
Hello. What version 9 reorg partition parallelism results were obtained and where can they be seen? When I looked in the version 9 performance topics red book, I could not find anything in this area.
Okay, this is actually Craig Frisky, and I'm subbing for Håkon. He's unavailable at this particular point in time. And they aren't in the red book at this time. We are gathering more of those results at this time, and I guess you could send a note to me, Craig Frisky, and I will send you an update with those statistics. And then I guess we have to find some way to get those out generally later. And I'm wondering, are you interested specifically in performance with NPIs, without NPIs, or just in general?
In general, because I'm also assuming that you're doing parallel index build, so, you know, the sort of scenarios where you have partitioning indexes, you know, 1 through 6 NPIs, and for that matter, DIPSIs and so on, because, you know, there's a wide variety of environments that people want to run reorgs in, and so it'd be useful to know whether there are some circumstances where this works better than other circumstances.
Right, and I think our first pass through, we weren't as aware of that as we should have been, perhaps. And as we're presenting these topics, it's obvious that in some cases, customers are more interested because they have NPIs. In other cases, they don't have NPIs, but then the parallelism will affect you differently because there are a limited number of parallel tasks. So depending on the number of indexes and the number of partitions, your results may vary.
And what is that limit?
The limit?
In parallel tasks.
It's actually an environmental limit. So we internally see how much memory is available for the task and starting up the task. So I can't give you that number as far as an absolute number. It depends on your environment.
Now, in the actual presentation on page 19, there was a diagram of version 9 partition parallelism, and at least to me, it looked wrong because I thought it should show keys and RIDs being extracted during each reload, similar to the version 7 parallel partition load with parallel index build. Is that a correct view?
I'm looking at slide 19 now, and when you say extracted during unload?
Reload.
They are extracted during reload.
But the chart doesn't show that.
So the chart itself shows unloading of data and sorting it and then reload.
Right.
And then you see the reload task and then the arrows between the boxes on the right side of the reload task and the sort. That's the extraction of keys.
Yeah, because it makes it look like it's getting extracted out of the partitions, you know, as opposed to the diagrams for version 7, which showed, you know, arrows branching off of each of the reload partition, you know, processes, sort of going off to multiple sort tasks and so on, which gave this sort of impression of, you know, overlapping workload, parallelism, and therefore better results.
Okay.
So I guess my underlying question is the actual pattern like the version 7 parallel partition?
Yes, it is. It is. So
with that overlapping processing, extracting, and sorting?
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Our next question now comes from Ira Feldman, Brown Brothers Harriman.
Yeah, hello, Craig. I have a question regarding the maintenance of the histogram statistics. When does that occur?
Oh, the maintenance? You're talking about
service-level
maintenance? Are you talking
about when you have the equi-depth histograms, when you construct them. They first get constructed. Then how are they maintained when the underlying data changes? How are the histograms kept up to date?
Well, those histograms are collected when you run stats. So those values will not change until you execute run stats again.
Oh, I see. So it's a manual process, basically.
It is,
so,
yes. It's not like real-time stats where that changed as you insert and delete.
Oh, okay. So the burden is on you, really, to maintain the accuracy of the underlying statistics via the run stats.
Correct.
It's not autonomic like it is on the distributed platform.
That's correct.
Okay. The other question is the default number of quantiles is 100. What is the recommended value, though? That seems to be very excessive, 100 quantiles.
Wow. I couldn't give you that recommended value. The default is 100, and I'm really not an expert in that area as far as optimization. And I could refer you to someone on our team, though, who if you send me a note at craig@frisky@us.ibm.com. And I'll refer that on to that person.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you're using, I don't know if you're on version 9 yet or you're using the Optimization Service Center or some of the advisor utilities. Yeah, because I think it's not a clear-cut answer. I think that person will have you do some analysis, you know, for your particular table. And so forth, and then make recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it will involve some of those tools.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
And next up from HSBC Bank, we have Warner Saidi.
Hi, I want to ask a question about the utility enhancement tool, about the canceling of trades. You say you have a hook into these new tool B. Do you also have an exit just before the switch phase, for example, of a reorg? Because if you're going to cancel all your threads before the reorg starts and then make the object unavailable, that's like an shared level none, right?
So Tom, you want to take that or me?
I'll let you take it, Craig.
Okay, so what was described in the presentation the utility enhancement tool, yes, before you run the reorg. And there's actually another requirement that's out there for the switch phase of reorg. And we haven't put that into plan yet, but that is a consideration to actually have the cancel of threads within the switch phase. And so if you haven't added in your input to that requirement, it would be a good time because we are considering it at this time, but it's not in plan.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, because that will be very useful.
Yes.
And now with one question remaining, we'd like to remind you once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 now. And now we go to a follow-up from Harry Shanmugathan with Harry's Database.
This is again for Craig. Around page number 6 in the discussion of the APAR regarding compressed partitions, reorg, and load. I was interested in knowing whether there were test results available showing the amount of virtual and real storage required when you increase the value of this ZPARM, and in particular, what reports to look to see the sort of increase in usage of virtual and real storage. Because when I look in the version 9 performance topics, I don't see any numbers in this area or test cases in this area. In fact, in general for the utilities, I don't see any information about their virtual storage or real storage consumption.
Right. That's an interesting question because I think we typically haven't measured that or published that. And because this is service, like you can imagine, it was something that was actually run into when a customer was running and building dictionaries on 4,096 partitions, which you can now have as of version 8. And so when we looked at it at that point in time, we didn't do the measurements for exact space usage. We simply restricted it back at 254, which was the limit before version 8. So no, I don't have those particular numbers, but it sounds like you would be interested in space usage, especially for these two utilities. Is that correct?
Yes, in the sense that from reading the original APAR, the risk that you run is that your LPAR dies, which is sort of a nasty thing to happen.
Right.
So, you know, it's the kind of thing that it makes one leery to even think about doing something down that direction if one doesn't have the basis for, you know, having some confidence in terms of what its implications are.
Right. So as of version 9, now with reorg, that limit has been removed with the better space handling and reuse. And so the restriction is just with load. So I assume that's what you'd be interested in.
Well, more particularly load in version 8, because, you know, load and reorg.
Okay.
And the people that I'm, you know, deal with are still on version 8.
Yeah. I'll pass that on to our measurement group. We in the past, we've traditionally measured performance more than space usage.
And by what I'm referring to is virtual storage.
Right.
Right, and real storage, because, you know, the issue is to avoid killing your LPAR.
Right.
Or, you know, having, you know, thrashing and paging and, you know, driving yourself into the ground, you know, inadvertently by just, you know, submitting, you know, what seems like an innocuous reorg job.
Right. And I think, well, there were more problems with that in migration to version 8 with the extra virtual storage and not having physical memory behind that. But I think also just the extreme limits. I don't know if you're actually at 4,096 partitions now or not, but that was the test that was run when it was hit. And so most customers really aren't approaching that threshold at all.
Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
And, gentlemen, we have no further questions at this time. Mr. Hubbard, I'll turn the conference back over to you for additional or closing remarks.
Okay. I'd like to thank everyone for taking time to listen to us today and wish you well in your DB2 endeavors. So thank you very much.
And, again, that does conclude our call for today. Thank you, everyone, for your participation. Have a good day.